Circles, a conflict resolution organization specializing in teaching elementary school students peaceful ways to engage with their communities. Please welcome a true leader, the incomparable Joe Manji. Thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm honored, Troy. Thank you for all of that. That's too much, but thank you. Thank you.
No, it's not. So what I find fascinating about you is that I was talking to Dave McGrath. Our listeners know who he is. That you are just the most calm and collected individual that I think I've ever met in my life. And it's hard to believe that sometimes, considering your upbringing. It was a difficult upbringing. So talk about your early days growing up in Milwaukee and how you became so calm and peaceful throughout all of that.
Well, thank you, Troy, first of all. I grew up in Milwaukee primarily in the 50s and 60s. And I went to Blessed Sacrament Elementary School, and then to Marquette High School, and then on to Marquette University. So I'm at Blessed Sacrament, and I'm a first grader. And on the way home, we walked like a mile home. This is on near Jackson Park in Milwaukee. There was this third or fourth grade kid every day waiting for me, walking through Jackson Park, and he was bullying me. Had me down on the ground, and I don't even want to talk, you know, about what. So enough was enough, and I went to my first grade teacher, Sister Mary Ralph, and she was a young Notre Dame nun, and I had the courage to tell her what was happening. And she said, "Who is this kid? Describe him to me." So she calls the office, and another nun, older nun, comes in to take over the class. Sister Mary Ralph marches me up two floors to the third grade classes, talks to the nun at the doorway, pulls out this kid into the hall, and it's just me and the kid and Sister Mary Ralph. And so she says to the kid, "You're bullying Joey here? That's got to stop. All right, Joey, take your best shot." I'm looking at her, you know, you're not supposed to hit anybody. Take your best shot. Punch him in the nose. So I'm a first grader, and I had to reach up to punch this kid in the nose.
Oh, my goodness.
And I hit him pretty hard. I mean, he got shook. So Sister Mary Ralph, and you know, marches me back to class, and she's, "I'm always here for you. Don't ever let that happen again." Those were the nuns in those days. That kid not only never bothered me again, I never saw him again.
Wow.
So that was, you know, my first episode of being a kid who was bullied. And then the Catholic Church was difficult, you know, at the time. And my next episode was, I had a nun in fourth grade, Sister Mary Ralph again. Somehow they changed the grades. And I love that lady. So it's the end of the year at Jackson Park. All of the kids, all of the grades are having the school picnic. And we're having a baseball game. And there was a substitute teacher, a male man, not a clergyman. And for some reason, he singles me out. I didn't do anything wrong. And tells me to sit up against a tree. And so I didn't get to play. And the guy just didn't like me, didn't like how I looked. And, you know, I'm a fourth grader. Who does that? But that happened. Sister Mary Ralph ambles along, comes over and says, "Joey, what are you doing here?" I said, "Well, he won't let me play, sister." "Well, what'd you do?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know what I did. I was like all the other kids." So she goes over to this guy, chews him out, motions over to me. I'm next at bat. I pick up a bat. Sister Mary Rolfe is watching from the sidelines. First pitch, I hit a grand slam home run. I hit that. I was so upset. I had tears in my eyes. I was being bullied by this older man, this teacher, for no reason. And I ran around the bases, and when I saw Sister Mary Rolfe, I was so happy. I gave her the heads-up sign, and she was smiling ear to ear. And so that's my second episode of being wary of adults. But Sister Mary Ralph was there not once, but twice. So,
and you always talk about you know, you said this before, because as a disclaimer, I'm also on the board of Peace and Learning Circles, where Joe is the president. But you say that there's always one person, that there's always these mentors that right. show up, protectors, guiders that show up in our lives.
I think that's our responsibility in life. Everybody needs help. My favorite quote of all times is the following, and I've used it at graduation ceremonies, and everybody, if you want to write it down, you certainly can. Our life is a journey that sometimes leads us through rough places, but the walk is so much easier when we travel beside one another. That way we can reach out and find help when we need someone to lean on. It doesn't matter whose turn it might be or how much time it takes until the path becomes smooth again. All that does matter is that we're always there for each other and that we'll keep walking side by side into the future. Always be that someone to lean on. So that's my favorite quote. I mean, everybody goes through tough times. Everybody. Everybody has challenges.
But see, Joe, I do believe that. But not everyone comes out the other side like you have. Extremely mm-hmm. successful, high achiever in everything that you've ever done. What was the difference there? Because you could have gone the other way.
Right. You know, I don't know. It's, you know, my mother was very courageous. And I learned a lot from her. My father, not so much. I think to some degree it was the upbringing from the nuns. And then going to Marquette High School, a Jesuit school, where from day one, that was the mantra of the school. This is way back in 1957, where they talked about racism and diversity. They were way, way ahead of their time.
Yeah.
And being kind to people. I mean, we did a lot of things. We went into the inner city and we brought produce to families. We were always doing something to help the community. Mm-hmm. So that was instilled in us. But even then, you know, there were episodes. I was a cross-country runner because I was horrible in football. I'm sure I hold the all-time record at Marquette High for the most fumbles in a row. If you fumbled one time, the coach got so mad he gave it to you again and again until you didn't fumble. This was in practice. We were state champions 4 years in a row, but I was on the hamburger squad because we practiced with the varsity to get them ready for the game. So basically we were hamburger. I mean, I came home like Beetle Bailey in the comic strip, and finally one time I came home and I was just beat up all over, bruises, bandages. My mother said, that's it. You're not playing football anymore. So I go out for cross country. There was a movie called Long Distance Runner, Life of the Long Distance Runner or whatever. And it was considered a sissy sport. So here we are at Marquette High, 1,000 boys in the auditorium for the fall sports assembly after the football season and soccer and cross country and swimming seasons are over. And I end up being co-captain of the cross-country team. So I get a major letter, which was a huge deal. I mean, you're a letterman. I mean, you get a major letter on a sweater. You know, I don't know how we could afford the sweater, but I thought, whoa, this is really cool, you know?
Wow.
So I'm up on stage after the football gods, we called them, and we're the cross-country team, and there's no applause. There's nothing, you know, like, who are those guys? Sissy sport.
Mm-hmm.
But I get my major letter from my Jesuit father, Marvin Vens. He was another person that helped me. On the way back to my seat, this is Marquette High. We're supposed to be one for all and one all for one. I get called a dago and a wop with, of course, you know, the swear words in front of it and behind it. I sit down and, you know, it's...
And for those that don't know, those are derogatory...
Words for Italians.
Right.
Right. It was tough growing up. We were the only Italian family in our church and on the south side, so it was a lot of that. But this is my high school, you know, and we were a good team. We represented the school. And so this one kid behind me, and the anger, Troy, and the hatred, I mean, guy was... I didn't even know this kid. You know, I didn't, because we were all sectioned off according to our ability. There were seven groupings of students at Marquette High. One was the top. I was in two. Mm-hmm. The geniuses were in one, you know. So, but out in the hallway, this kid is in my face, and I'm looking at him with the anger and the hatred, like, why? But then you have to step up, you know. So we're nose to nose. We're getting ready to duke it out. And in swoops in Father Marvin Menz, breaks us apart and says, Joe, you got more to lose. You don't want to lose your letter. He doesn't have a letter. He takes this kid away to the office. I never saw the kid again. But what I couldn't understand, Troy, was just the blind hatred. You know, so, yeah, being Italian in the 50s and 60s, it was tough in Milwaukee. It really was at that time. My father picketed the Godfather movies on Wisconsin Avenue as discriminatory against Italians. So in 60 years or 70 years that Hollywood has made movies, there's been maybe one about Italians that isn't about the mafia. And people will think, well, you know, what's the big deal, you know? But if you're an Italian kid, just like, you know, if you're a student of color, if you're an African-American kid or a Hispanic kid or an Asian kid or a Muslim kid, no matter who you are, it hurts. So there was a lot of that. And
did you internalize that?
You know, we sat at the table, or two brothers, a sister, my mom and dad, and one night we seriously thought of changing our name to Martin.
That's unbelievable.
That's how bad it was for us. We almost did it. My mother got the legal papers and everything. We came pretty darn close. And see, Mangi is short for Mangi Arasiana. So we almost changed it to Martin, but we hung in there. That's how bad it was.
Wow. And the fact that, because most parents would say, oh, you know, tough it out, you know, go
right,
through.
Right.
But the fact that it was so bad that all of you considered changing.
Right.
I mean, that's really unbelievable.
I still remember that.
I was just going to say, do you remember sitting at the dining room table?
I remember my mother and father talking about it, and we were all, and then we said, no. My mother fought cancer for 25 years, and she was Polish. That's the odd thing. We're Polish-Italian. She was a tough person who said, we're not giving in. We're just, we've got to learn from this. So,
are you glad? Obviously you're glad now that you.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. You can't quit. You got to hang in and keep fighting. High school, you had to be unbelievably good to play ball for Marquette High. But there were there were church leagues, there were city leagues. So I played for my church league. And same thing. You know, I from my own teammates, the word Wappendago is being thrown around in the locker room. And the coach never played me. I was the kid on the end of the bench, and I had a pretty good shot. But even if we were up by 40 points, he just didn't. No reason. I'm Italian. That's how it was. And so I quit. I turned in my uniform at the church rectory, and I caused such an uproar that Father John Ernester, another guy, he was an associate pastor, called me up, had me over to his office, just said, come clean. I want to know. You don't quit. What happened? So I told him. So he threatened to cancel the season. He and those kids on the team were polite to me, went out of their way to be polite to me after that. You know, the one person who saved us is Vince Lombardi. Vince Lombardi came to the Packers when I was a sophomore, I think, at Marquette High, and the Packers were awful before that. They were like 1-11, 1-12. In one season, he turns the team around. And then two years later, they start winning their series of five championships. But Vince Lombardi was Italian, and the respect that he earned for the Italian population in Milwaukee and Wisconsin is unbelievable. So there, I never met the man. You know, I idolized him, but there you go. It wasn't the Pope You know, it wasn't St., you know, Charles Baremo or anybody. It was Vince Lombardi.
Mm. You know, the same could be said, and again, this is a little bit later, but you look at someone like Martin Luther King Jr.
Right.
You know, for the African-American movement.
Right.
And even black music, you look at Motown and those kind of celebrity figures that change the identity, or at least what people perceive of certain races. Obviously, you've dedicated your life to education. Some of the tactics that you talked about, you know, where you get pulled out of the classroom and then your the sister says, take a shot, right? That would never be allowed today.
No, those are the 50s. Those are the nuns. You didn't mess with the nuns.
So what do you think about that as we see so many instances of, you know, unruly kids? I mean, just here in Kenosha a few weeks ago, a bunch of teenagers went into the North Face and took out. Yeah. So do you think we need to go back to those tactics for some kids?
I think, you know, not necessarily, although I'll tell you what, at seventh grade, we used to tease each other. We had Sister Margaret Mary Mahler, and it was all you kids are going straight to hell, but not soon enough. So I don't know if, you know, I think it starts early and families have to come together and be there for the kids and surround the kids. If a two-parent family isn't possible, then the surrounding family has to be there. Mm-hmm. Uncles, aunts, grandmas, sisters, brothers, everybody's got to have something. And there has to be, you know, I would talk to all the time to the teachers. My mentor was Sylvia Leone from Lincoln Junior High when Pat and I first came to Kenosha. And she was a refugee from Cuba. And she was dangerous to Fidel Castro because she was female and had a doctorate. Mm. So she was one of the boat people to Miami. How she ends up in Kenosha at Lincoln Junior High, she never said. But she taught me when you hire teachers, Joe, you're going to be a principal, it's just two things. They have to love kids and they have to love teaching. Mm. I think the same thing applies to parenting. Mm. You have to love your kids and you have to love parenting.
Right. And see, I think what parents get misconstrued about that is love. And again, I'm not a parent,
right,
but love means time. It right. means showing up
exactly
to the PTA meetings. It means right. going to the school plays. It doesn't necessarily mean providing.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it. But
so for the kids at North Face, where are the parents in all of this? I would, if kids do that, I would bring the parents in with the kid, give them counseling, parenting skills, and require them to do that, because nobody, we silo in our country, and you can't have silos. Everybody has to work together. The Native Americans have this beautiful saying, the circle is a sacred symbol of life. Individual parts within the circle connect with every other, and what happens to one or what one part does affects all within the circle. That's Virginia Driving Hawk Sneave, who's from the Cherokee Nation. So too with the family. Family's a circle.
Hmm.
And those kids, somebody should have been with them, spending time with them and knowing where they are, you know. And so,
and see, it's so funny you say that. I'm 27 now. I mean, I'm grown.
Right.
My mother still texts me, Troy, are you doing okay? How's class going? How's school going? She's still actively engaged in my life. And I mean, and I like it that way because she built that relationship with me over the years. So you're so right that especially at that young age, teenage years, it's so critical.
When the kids at Bradford High School, my 18 years there, my best job, or not even a job, it was a passion, a mission, I would always meet with the kids who were in trouble. You know, giving them detentions. We had Saturday morning detentions, suspensions, all of that. But then what?
Mm.
You know, there's got to be love there together with the discipline. And I tried to be a really, really good listener. So I would ask whoever the student was, I'm not going to scold you. I'm not going to give you advice. I'm not going to go over the rules. I'm just going to shut up and listen. Tell me what's going on. And sometimes it took two meetings, and I would listen and listen and not say anything. And then finally, this young lady who I knew was the leader of the Latin Queens says...
Was that a gang?
At the time.
Okay.
Mr. Principal, I'm not perfect, but parts of me are excellent, and you and the school don't see my excellent parts.
Mm.
She had one passing grade in art, got an A. Everything else was straight Fs. So I went to the shop teacher, the auto tech teacher, and he's losing kids, and he's worried about his job. And I said, you know, Ron, you don't have any girls in this class, and you got three cars on the deck. I get that the kids are working on them. I've got this young lady who's an artist. How about we detail your cars? I'll come up with the supplies, the money for the paint. We'll put them out on the deck so all the kids can see them. It's a two-hour class. It's a two-credit class. We have to save this young lady.
Hmm.
He says yes. She comes in, starts detailing the cars like they're unbelievable. They're on the deck. All the kids in the school have to walk by this deck to come in. And now all their kinds of girls are... Troy, the last I heard, she's the manager of three AutoZone shops in the suburbs of Cleveland.
Unbelievable.
So...
And your interaction... I believe saved her life.
Maybe, you know, I would hope that there were others along the way, but when you find what someone is excellent at, then you work on that excellence, and that has a ripple effect on other things. So, you know, the Peace Corps, John F. Kennedy's my hero. He gets assassinated. I'm at Marquette University. I'm crestfallen. I changed my life around, so I'm going to sign up for the Peace Corps because he started it with Sergeant Shriver and Hubert Humphrey. And graduation, I take a seven-hour exam. I get this official-looking packet. My parents are freaking out. And I said, well, it's 3 months at the University of Texas. I probably won't make it anyway. You know, let me give it a try. So I get to Texas, and there's all these obstacles, and there's 72 of us, and Peace Corps whittles us down to 36. It's 14 hours a day, 6 days a week. We're drop-dead exhausted. We had 26 different shots from the bubonic plague to polio to all of that. We're shipped to Iran 3 days in the capital city, and boom, I'm on a bus 9 hours away on the edge of the desert, and this is my town, Malyar, Iran. And there was an agricultural volunteer there for a while, and... But yeah, that was my 2 years, my adventures, and that's probably, we don't have time for that.
I'm curious, though, because John F. Kennedy was your hero. You went to the Peace Corps. Education has been your life. I mean, you've dedicated your life to education. We were talking about kind of the kids, you know, that we have so many, it seems to be more troubled youth now than there were. Do you see a difference?
With Peace Learning Circles, we're in a lot of schools, and it's surprising. Kids can blow you away. It depends on the principal. It depends on the teachers. An example, one of our top schools is Brass Elementary. Whatever it is, we clicked there, but the principal came to every session.
Mm.
But even so, I mean, the kids wrote a booklet. I mean, they were wonderful, beautiful kids. Sharp as tacks, and so we must have touched something. So, you got to look for kids' talents and excellence, and you got to hang in there. You know, at the end of my 2 year stint in Iran, there were only 8 of us left, and Peace Corps did a survey. We got tested on the way out. What was it about you 8? That made it through the 2 years. I mean, I'm Christian in a Muslim country. I'm considered unclean. I lost 30 pounds. I'm down to 135. I had to, you know, pin up my underwear.
Mm.
I looked like a scarecrow. But you keep going. You just never, ever, ever give up, and you find something. For me, it was my students in Iran. I started a basketball league. I started a soccer league. Shoot Kanid. All everybody wanted to do was shoot the basketball. Nobody would pass to anybody. It was 5 guys coming down the court. Whoever had the ball was going to shoot, you know. Uh-huh. And there was no passing. I tried to instill the concept of passing the basketball. I failed miserably. So you think
that it's, I mean, because you took such an active role with these students in Iran, you'd obviously hear a superintendent as a principal. So you believe it's more on the adults in the room to kind of set the tone for the children?
Absolutely. I would take the yearbook home and memorize 10 first names a night. I think I got up to, we had 1,800 kids at Bradford. I knew all the seniors for sure because that was important, but I knew the first names of maybe 1,000 kids. And I would beat myself up mentally that I didn't know more. But knowing a student's name, even when they don't expect it, just to see the surprise on their faces is huge. And you have to be visible. So every passing time, before school, I was always out welcoming everybody in, making sure, and just eyeing up the crowd. If somebody was upset, I could see it, and I'd get to the counselor. But then at the end of the day, you'd be out there also, because you see your goodbyes have to be as strong as your hellos. Mm. So I wanted to make sure they were coming back the next day. But you going to all the football games, basketball games, swimming meets, soccer games. I mean, kids would see me in the hall. You didn't come to our swimming meet. You know, where were you? And swimming, I love those guys. But it's so hot in the pools. You know, you're just sweating bullets. And it takes forever. It's like a four-hour marathon when you include the diving and all of that. Right. So,
but, Joe, I just don't think they make them like you anymore. Your dedication level to memorize these kids, to go to these events, I just don't see that. You just don't see that anymore.
It's sad. It really is, and it breaks your heart, you know.
Because I wish you were my principal.
I don't think, you know, now after all these years, you think, well, and Kenosha welcomed me for being Italian. That wasn't like that before. I mean, even at Marquette University, if you weren't in the fraternity and sorority, you were nothing. And I worked at a bicycle shop on Valide Street, putting bicycles together. It was a warehouse from scratch to help pay for my tuition at Marquette, and took out loans and whatever. But Kenosha, you know, really, really welcomed me. There's been very few dissenters. You know, there are. You know, of course.
Of but, you?
Oh, yeah.
Who are these idiots? I'm sorry. That's...
Oh, yeah. You rub people, the wrong way. But what do? You know, you just say a prayer for them. I think, through all the years, my mother's courage, she fought cancer for 25, 30 years. She started getting cancer when I was in high school, senior year. I have my letter sweater, and Friday was school spirit day, and I'm walking in with blonde hairs on my sweater, and the kids are all razzing me like, who is she? Well, my mother was starting with the old-fashioned chemotherapy, and my letter sweater was the only thing that kept her warm. So my mother wore it 6 days a week. I wore it on Fridays, and I never told anybody that those blonde hairs were from my mother, not from, you know, whoever. I mean, in those days, I was kind of a nerd. I didn't date anybody, you know. Arquette High's an all-boys school. I mean, it's, you know, who are you going to meet? I think, you know, her never giving up. She dressed like Sophia Loren until the week she passed away. And I think, you know, the Jesuit education that I have, but I don't know, Troy. There was always just something there where I looked out for the little guy.
Well, you have just listened to one of the most remarkable individuals I've ever met. Thank you so much for joining us on this edition of Generation Now. This show will be archived on our website, wgtd.org. Just search for Generation Now in the search tab, and you will find this episode and share it with as many people that you can. Until next time, bye, everybody.
The Gateway Radio Reading Service is for visually impaired listeners who would like to have newspapers and books read to them. In the Kenosha Racine area, easy-to-operate radios are available free of charge. Visit WGTD.org or call 564-374.